Today on Jay Sekulow Live, is FISA dead?
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
The FISA court has to fix their problems internally. The bill was trying to do some reforms, didn't go far enough, clearly. But at the same time, there was more work that needed to be done. And then you throw in the fact that there still has been no accountability.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
There has to be accountability for those people that abused the FISA court, that did other things illegally within the FBI. Some of those people need to go to jail. And I think once that happens, you'll see an ability to come back together and get this program back on track.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Folks, we're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. As we discussed yesterday in briefly in relation to all the issues involving the actors, we'll say, and what's going to occur next week. As a reminder, you know, we have Monday. The response is due from the judge in the Mike Flynn case, and the bizarre natures we discussed earlier in the week about appointing an outside counsel to represent you and then put that forward. And so these issues, that's happening on Monday when we're back on the air with you. And then, of course, later in the week, we're going to hear from Rod Rosenstein. He's testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee in person. And we know that Senator Lindsey Graham, who chairs that committee, will be there. They're also voting, Than, on the ability for the subpoena power. You've also got on the FISA issue specifically, we know, the legislation itself and FISA as we know it, I think is fair to say, is dead. And what the House and the Senate have come up with is a compromise, is that they'll come together to try and come up with compromise legislation. But what's interesting to me is that basically the Department of Justice said if you need the outside counsel, you basically cannot utilize something like FISA anyways, and they could just use – it would be better for them to use the laws that they already have for intelligence gathering and surveillance than to come up with FISA. So it's just been interesting to see how the responses have been. But what is clear in Washington, D.C. is that folks are not ready to just give this blanket power back to the executive branch right now because of the issues of Jim Comey's use, Andrew McCabe's use, Peter Strzok's use. You go down the line. These individuals, we said, may be remembered as those who actually are the reason why FBI, Department of Justice, intelligence community does not have these extended powers that they received in the post-9/11 world.
Yeah, I really view this as a good development, Jordan. I really do. And interestingly enough, it was not just folks on the right. It was not just the president. It was also certain members on the left. Zoe Lofgren was one of them. And Jordan, the concerns about the reauthorization do come from different quarters. Like you said, there were some inside the law enforcement agency, inside the Department of Justice, who didn't like some of the reforms as far as having an advocate in the courtroom. But Jordan, I think that the point that you made is really key here. Department of Justice said, look, if you take the time to get this right, we can still secure the American people using the other tools that we have. Now, eventually, we need to get something on the table. We need a patchwork in place where we can have some of these tools. But Jordan, this is the opportunity to do it right. And I was glad that the Department of Justice acknowledged that. And look, the White House, I mean, there's just no way that you can refute the concerns that they have. This process was abused, and the idea of reauthorizing it without making sure that those who abused it are not only held accountable, but then that future people can't abuse it the same way. Jordan, that absolutely should not happen. So I view this coming together to do a conference committee between the House and the Senate, I view it as absolutely great news for the American people.
All right. And again, as we're going this break, we're taking your phone calls about this, answer your questions about FISA, answer your questions about what does it mean that the House, the Senate are coming together in this this joint committee. Remember, there's bipartisan opposition to this reauthorization. This was not just Republicans. Nancy Pelosi lost control of her own caucus, which has not happened that often in this House of Representatives, where she's lost the control to the point where she cannot get legislation through even on a partisan basis, the minimum you need, like the 218, and instead had to rely on Republicans to save this. They were not willing to do that without major reforms, and reforms that again, I think probably do need to be debated and discussed with the Justice Department, but even a short-term reauthorization. And we're not ignoring what's happening in our country as well, in George Floyd and what happened there in that situation, which everyone has condemned and said it looks horrible, needs the investigation. But now, of course, these riots that are spreading, we're praying for our country. We'll be back.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. And folks, you know, we have been live with you throughout, whether we were broadcasting from our homes, now back in the studio here, and Than is able to be in our Washington, D.C. office. But honestly, it's, again, Than, for the most part, that's because of the media broadcasting. And that office, because of where it's located, has not fully been totally reopened. In every state and city, we're talking to people from across the country are dealing with different situations. People are also dealing, and so we've never ignored the COVID issue. And of course, the legal issues that arise from it. I will tell you the ACLJ has been working on those, and there'll be more to discuss some of that next week as well in the broadcast. And so these are very state to state specific, and so we are working on that. I will also say that with what's happened with George Floyd and the situation there in Minneapolis, one of the reasons why I didn't go immediately to it on the broadcast was because there was nothing to debate. You know, there was nothing to debate about that incident. And I thought it was very clear from both sides of the political aisle, both sides of the law enforcement individuals that looked at that and said, from what they can see, it looked very bad. You know, this, I'm coming to you as someone, one, who, We have law enforcement officials and many of our offices at the ACLJ and of course work with the law enforcement community, but also we're not ignoring these situations that are happening in our country, whether it's a riot in Minneapolis or in other cities where some of these protests have turned more violent and in response. And the fact is that most people protesting are not coming from that position. And I think there's been widespread, and I'm not asking us to debate this on the air because I don't think there's anything to debate. I think what you can do for your country right now is pray for your country, whether it's the situation that's boiling over in some of these communities that have not always faced these issues head on. I will say that. And then in other places where, again, people that have not been able to work, people that have not, their business closed, there's a lot of tension. There is a lot of tension right now. We're not ignoring that on the broadcast, nor have we wanted to on air. But what we have tried to do, and I think, Than, this has been important, is Congress is still working on these issues which may not be directly related, you know, like FISA, big issues, and we don't want people to have no attention on that because I think that's what Congress was keying in on. They thought FISA could just and I, when I say they, I'm talking about kind of the old school Washington, D.C., both sides of the aisle in some to some extent. But even like Nancy Pelosi thought, I can just get this through right now because no one's focused on it. And that is not the case because there are enough folks like us, like what we're doing at ACLJ Than, where we understand what our role is and the issues that we specialize in and focus in on. And that, and then we bring that to the folks out there. And members of Congress didn't feel comfortable just giving this a blanket thumbs up to this power to back to the FBI and DOJ specifically.
Totally agree with you, Jordan. You know, my heart breaks for George Floyd and his family. My heart breaks for Ahmaud Arbery and his family. My heart breaks for those who lost their lives in these protests. And look, what's happening is not honoring to the lives of those who've lost. And I think speaking and giving our thoughts and prayers to what's happening is the right thing to do. But, Jordan, we have been focusing on this abuse from law enforcement from a different perspective for a long time now. I mean, that's what this FISA abuse was. The American people turned over a sacred authority to surveil, in some cases, U.S. citizens through the FISA court and gave that sacred power to a set of bureaucrats and a set of law enforcement officials. And Jordan, just plain and simple, they abused it. They used information that they knew could not be substantiated to surveil U.S. citizens, to surveil an incoming president that the American people had chosen. And reforms have to be made. And I said on this broadcast yesterday, Jordan, and I really do believe it, as much as I think the FISA tools are important for law enforcement, I think the reforms are actually going to have to go a bit too far initially in order for the FISA court or whatever it's called eventually. I like your idea actually of rebuilding it from the ground up, calling it something different. But Jordan, they're going to have to build that trust back. So for a time, do we have to give an advocate in that courtroom access to all of the information in every case that involves a U.S. citizen and let them defend that U.S. citizen until they build trust back? In my view, Jordan, we do. And that's really at the center of this debate right now. I think that's where the White House is. The Department of Justice and some inside might have a slightly different view. But again, Jordan, going to a conference committee, this is actually regular order, and it's that kind of nuanced disagreement or debate. That's where it's supposed to take place. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, this is the issue with FISA. FISA was created in response to 9/11, and it was a broad power because we needed to deal with something quickly that we knew was going to be an issue. And it has been an issue. It's still an issue. It's been an issue in the past few weeks, we've learned about, while FISA was active, Saudis infiltrated their Air Force to come to our country to carry out an attack on one of our bases. And that took a year. Now, FISA was working during that. We don't know how much that was utilized because a lot of this was found out after the terrorist attack occurred. So I don't think they were monitoring that group. And to me, that's questionable. At the same time, they were using FISA to try and take down a president of the United States. And they hid behind that. That was their like whole justification. They lied to FISA, remember? They lied. They used the Steele dossier. They knew it was wrong. But they used that to get their FISA spy warrants. And then they said, well, see, FISA approved what we did. And the problem is FISA was a rubber stamp. When you had 99.9% approval, the only way that works in any kind of legal system is either the FBI has no issues at all and they are 100% accurate and they were only dealing with foreign terrorists and foreign actors, but suddenly you realize their focus was, how do we get at Americans by utilizing FISA? And Americans, we have different rights because we have those rights guaranteed to us as citizens by the Constitution of the United States. Listen to Steve Scalise. Again, this is the Republican whip in the House. And he's dealt with these attacks by another American. He's dealt with this directly, that shooting attack on the Republicans. And so I think that to hear from him directly on this and how this was abused is the truth. And it's not the field agents. This is all 7th floor Washington, D.C., bad actors. But, as Than said, because they had so much power in this very D.C.-centric process, they will now lose out at the field level, the folks who actually need this kind of authority to act to combat terrorism, because of the bad actions that were too much. They went too far. So I think we have to go that much further to give them even a chance at having anything like this again. Listen to Steve Scalise, Bite 2.
FISA has been used successfully in the past to track terrorists abroad. It's why the law was created, but it was a very narrow scope, and the way it was used was supposed to be in a way that only applied to terrorists or Americans who were abroad fighting with terrorists, not to spy on a candidate for president or people that were working around him.
And realize, you know, they didn't stop Than even while he was just a candidate, which is outrageous enough to consider you a major party candidate, any party candidate, actually. Doesn't matter, because it shouldn't matter if it's a House race, Senate race, state, whatever. You know, this is the most high profile. The fact that they thought they could get away with doing something like this by utilizing the farce of FISA to the unmasking and all of this for political purposes, for political gain, is the worst of the worst of law. It is to use that against. We dealt with that with the IRS. And we've now are dealing with it and the ramifications of it for those agencies. Remember, the IRS was basically gutted after what happened with Lois Lerner and their oversight powers were gutted. And people and they've been very direct about that. We thought that was the case. You had to basically bring down the IRS to rebuild it from the ground up.
Jordan, this is such an important point for people to understand. The authorizing statute here is literally called the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. The entire purpose was to have a tool to surveil foreigners. Now, there were sometimes Americans that were picked up into it, but that was supposed to be secondary. Jordan, in this case, they turned that absolutely on its head. The goal here was to surveil and target American citizens, including the incoming president of the United States, including his aides, his advisors, and they used a foreigner or interaction with a foreigner and legitimate interaction at that case, Jordan, to target those U.S. They turned the purpose of the act on its head. Now, why did they do it? They do it for the reason that you just said. It was a political agenda. They were trying to accomplish a political end, and they did it in a format where the target had no way to defend itself. Just quickly, Jordan, this amicus, this advocate inside the room that's supposed to defend the target, this was in place when this was happening. That was enacted in 2015. The problem is that advocate did not have the authority to see the evidence that was in question here. This was abuse of power, plain and simple.
Yes, this is the issue that is saying, remember, this is not like your attorney, because you wouldn't know if you were being subject to this or if you're a foreign actor subject to this. But again, the information needs to be direct, because what they started doing is saying, well, if you're an American who we suspect is actually become an agent for a foreign government, suddenly you've lost all of these potentially lost all these rights, at least for surveillance purposes. And we see how this leads to people's lives being ruined, or at least attempted to be ruined. We're going to take your calls. 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
All right, folks, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. We're discussing this FISA issue. I think it's very important to point out, too, because and members of Congress are starting to be a little bit more specific about this, but if you're not watching on Facebook and Periscope, you may not have seen. So, Senator Rubio has now taken up the mantle as chair of the Senate Intel Committee, and because Senator Burr decided during these investigation of financial issues, he didn't want to distract from the committee, so Senator Rubio moved up. And these, again, are folks. We also heard from a member of Congress, a former intelligence agent, who said, it's not, again, that they don't want this ability in the hands of the U.S. to deal with terrorism. But Mike Flynn, in that situation was never about terrorism. It was about policy disputes, legitimate policy disputes. American people decide who to elect, and then those people who we elect decide who they want to advise them. And you get to decide every 4 years, the case of the president, every 6 years, the case of a senator, every two for members of the House. And again, your governors at local, you get to decide. If you don't like who they have advising them and their policy positions, you decide to remove them. But if a law is being abused where the IRS decides they're going to silence a grassroots movement in the U.S. that they don't like, Tea Party, or a political party or candidate and their advisors they don't like, in the case of President Trump and Mike Flynn, and a whole host of others that were associated. So, Than, to me, it's getting back to terrorism, getting back to fighting terrorist attacks, getting back to the idea that, yes, there might be someone who was radicalized who is a U.S. citizen, and there should be some ability to do that so that we get ahead of these attacks. But at the same time, it didn't seem like that's ever been where the focus was so much on that seventh floor in Washington, D.C., of taking out President Trump. You wonder how these attacks are still happening that we hear about on military bases. You have to wonder if it's because they've been completely distracted, which is why maybe this is not the right time for them to have this power.
Jordan, the seventh floor took their eye off of terrorism. They did. They took their eye off terrorism and put it on politics. I think that happened in the IRS situation where they got outside their mission and decided to advance a political agenda. It happened here. And Jordan, I go back to something that Marco Rubio said in the sound you played a minute ago. He talked about how it wasn't necessarily the process that was broken, but how the process was used. And Jordan, look, I'm really not that concerned if the intelligence community goes into a secret process and has picked up a foreigner that is engaged in terrorist activities, whether or not that person has a forceful advocate in the room. But once an American is picked up, especially if it's an American that is part of the incoming administration, if that person is roped into the process, Jordan, the idea that that American would not be afforded representation inside that room. And look, I'll take it a step farther. Let's say one of the Americans that picked up has become radicalized, has become associated with a foreign person. It's still a good idea to have an advocate in the room to make sure that we pursue prosecution of that individual in a way that won't be undermined in the future. And I've got to tell you, I think a court and even the intelligence community, I don't think they would be hurt by that in the slightest.
No, again, they're dealing with the reality that they're not going to have this power carte blanche again. It's not going to happen. It's already gone. It's been gone for over a month now, and they were not able to sneak it back through without any major changes with Congress. And what Department of Justice has been doing is saying, okay, but if you do this change, you realize we're not going to be able to utilize this process. So how do you go about that? I think there has to be flexibility, but DOJ, FBI, and all that we've learned, this is their fault. This is their fault. They should take the blame. Jim Comey should be remembered as the reason why FISA expired. The reason why FISA expired, Bob Mueller, is because of you. Because you made up these allegations by a foreign agent in the first place, Christopher Steele, who then used other foreign agents to gather his info. Did we have FISAs on him? How many people do we have FISAs on? I mean, this is why. They don't even want the onion peeled back, in my opinion. Because you start peeling it back and you start realizing, wait, the focus is foreign, and yet their whole idea was how do you utilize foreign to Americans in a political context because of Russia? I mean, we may have policy, foreign policy differences with Russia. The president's been clear about that. We're going to discuss that, you know, with China today. Later on today, the president's going to discuss that too with what's happened in Hong Kong. Policy, differences, disputes, discussions, debates. None of that should warrant to the level of utilizing FISA, actually. If you look at the purpose, at least what Congress intended to do with FISA. I think that's important. Let's go to Lisa's call in California on line one. Lisa, thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call and for everything that you do. I have followed this with you for a long time. My question is about that advocate. To me, it always seemed wrong that there wasn't somebody, if you're wanting to surveil an American citizen, that there wasn't somebody in there advocating for them. Who would they get to be that advocate? And would, obviously, you want to spy on somebody, but how do we protect that person's rights?
Well, so obviously you would not, this would be almost like, I kind of compare it to, Than, a very much more serious version of like a public defender, except for you would not know because you're not, this is not criminal charges that are being brought against you. But as Than brought out and pointed out, ultimately to bring those charges in the long run, which will ultimately be to stop the terrorist attack, you know, to actually apprehend a person that you believe is going to carry out a terrorist attack, you can't be violating all of their rights that they may have as an American. But they still have rights facing criminal charges. And whether we're discussing what happens when you get arrested in Minneapolis and whether your rights were violated there or after you get arrested and whether your rights were violated in the process then that happened when they were surveilling you, what they based their charges on. So it causes serious problems for law enforcement long term if we don't have these changes and exculpatory evidence wasn't at least considered. So the information about the Steele dossier wasn't something we found out through media leaks, but instead was something that never got to this point where it's what we should have never gotten to this point in our country. But the FBI got out of control, Department of Justice got out of control, and we know that from their own inspector generals.
Yeah, if we shore this up, Jordan, I'm absolutely convinced that we will actually do a better job of prosecuting terrorism through the FISA courts than we did in the past. Look, there has been what is called an amicus inside this system since 2015. But the problem, Jordan, this amicus is supposed to advocate for the target of an application, but it's only triggered when the court actually invokes it. So it's at the court's discretion. Well, in the cases we're talking about now, the court had no idea that there was information that was not valid that was being used, so they wouldn't have invoked it. My view is that that amicus needs to be expanded so that anytime there's a U.S. citizen, that amicus is invoked and they have access to all of the information. Jordan, there is a legitimate concern on the part of the intelligence community that if you expand this too far, other countries won't share intelligence with you. And this goes to the caller's point. I think that's why it does need to be somebody that is not appointed by the target. Jordan, it needs to be somebody inside the process who's on case after case after case, but they have to have access to all of the information. I actually think that's a way to tell foreign countries, your information is going to be more secure now than it was in the past. Because look at it now, Jordan. I mean, that information is all over the place. Clearly, we failed on securing foreign countries' intel that they shared with us.
Folks, we're going to continue to take your phone calls. Second half hour is coming up on Jay Sekulow Live. We, again, are monitoring the situation in Minneapolis and across our country there. You've now got National Guard involved as well. And again, the response, I think, by the country was correct. That people were in unison, that what they could at least see on the video appeared to be wrong. And that it was widely condemned. But then, of course, we're now dealing with some of the aftermath of those who are trying to take peaceful protest and turn it violent.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
We'll fight for the right to live. Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to the second half hour of Jay Sekulow Live. We're taking your phone calls, your comments, too, on Pfizer. We want to answer as much as possible. There's been a lot of questions about and I thought it was interesting to see that when the Department of Justice was pressed, and again, their position is to also, they're fighting for their powers or to be restored to some extent, and whether the good actors on that may be in place now, but we're going to hear from people like Rod Rosenstein too, who have been accused of things in the media, like I'll wear a wire into the White House and we'll invoke a 25th Amendment. I mean, so there's things they, I'm sure, want to respond to. But we knew that this was happening at a level that got to the point where the president, by firing Jim Comey, who, by the way, Hillary Clinton also thought was a no-good actor, and most Democrats thought was a no-good actor, that he got way too involved in politics on both sides of the aisle and seemed to be trying to, again, it wasn't so much Republican-Democrat. It was putting pressure on Republicans-Democrats. I think Jim Comey wanted to have the same power over Hillary Clinton he thought he could try to have over Donald Trump, and that other FBI directors in our past have utilized, which is, we have this on you, so don't press me.
100%, Jordan. This was about Jim Comey thinking that he was above the law and the intelligence community, in some cases following his lead. And again, I think it happened mostly at the leadership levels. Jordan, two quick points. One, on the bipartisan opposition, even the conference committee members who will now negotiate this on behalf of the House, Jordan, I think largely break towards the side of creating more reforms for U.S. citizens, because you've got Jim Jordan and Devin Nunes, who would definitely be on that side, but you've also got Zoe Lofgren as one of the three Democrat conference committee members. She was one of the ones that was the most concerned from the Democrat side about adding these protections. Jordan, to your point about the Department of Justice concerns, these are legitimate concerns. They were concerned about some language that was added by Senators Leahy and Lee, an amendment that I actually think is a good one, that does give the amicus inside the court access to more sensitive materials. But the Department of Justice, Jordan, was legitimately concerned that those sensitive materials needed to be better secured so that they didn't lose access to intelligence from foreign countries. Jordan, both of those things can be true in one moment. That's why you need to do this carefully. It's why you need to increase reforms to make sure that the abuses don't happen. But then, Jordan, you do have to be able to make sure that those sensitive materials that are shared with the advocate don't leak out, because former U.S. officials think Jim Comey, that's what they did, Jordan.
And listen, this is going to be directly on point in the election 2020. I mean, there's a lot of issues you can go to. You can go to just the unrest in Minnesota right now that has spilled over into the entire country. It's a national broadcast. I thought, today we need to at least address one. There was no debate to be had a couple of days ago. And I understood the reaction that was happening in Minneapolis, the protests. When they turn violent and you start to see some of this additional violence in other cities as well, I think that is not good, because the majority of folks are peaceful protesters who were getting their message out loud and clear to a point that's probably not gotten out as loud and clear before. And I've lived in cities where these protests have occurred. I've not lived in one where it's gotten to this point, level of violence. But I will say that some of these bad actors who try to seize on the situation, it distracts from the national issue. But then we also, these kind of issues, if we fast forward ahead 5 months, and depending on what state you're in, that may feel differently. But for a lot of the country, we may be back to 100% open. And politics is going to play a point. So we'll get back to Than. We'll get back to your phone calls. We come back on Jay Sekulow Live. We are taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. But, one VP choice, it's starting to get more attention. Yesterday, her image was on Fox News. Today, there's longer pieces supporting her. Is Susan Rice, someone who was involved here in this specifically, someone who you must recall could not get confirmed as Secretary of State, so has stayed on as the NSA advisor. Again, just throwing that out there. 1-800-684-3110. It's not the right doing it either. It's the left starting to push her, and the more mainstream left, the traditional Washington Democrats.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
All right, so The Atlantic. I saw her picture. I have no idea who Joe Biden is going to choose for vice president. I didn't think Joe Biden was going to be the nominee. I think it just showed to you still, even with the changes that were made in the Democrat nominating process, because the way that they, Iowa, and from the start, it was a mess. It allowed him to kind of continue to surface, and they realized, then they got very nervous with Bernie Sanders. So again, they, I don't think that, by the way, it's necessarily a bad thing for Democrats that they got they show that Bernie Sanders was not going to be the voice for their party necessarily, progressives. But is it going to be a repeat? Which makes very relevant. You know, usually you kind of move forward. You wouldn't be hearing a president 4 years in necessarily talk about the previous president. The investigations wouldn't necessarily be going on. You kind of like move forward as a country. But this became so bad that they didn't stop after President Trump got elected. As bad as it was before, they still were going after him even after he took the oath of office. It led to Mueller. It led to then an impeachment and a very divided country. And now we're dealing with real crises, COVID, the discussion even that's happening out of Minneapolis. These are real national situations that you've got to deal with as a president. And the issue with FISA that we're talking about right now, the fact that Congress, the Washington crowds vote in a bipartisan way that we've usually seen when it came to intelligence issues and these kind of issues, wasn't enough. So that Nancy Pelosi, maybe for one of the first times I know of since she has had the House majority back, could not get something through on a partisan vote even.
Yeah, tried multiple times, Jordan. I mean, this was on the calendar a couple of days in a row, and yesterday was on the calendar a couple of different times. Leader Hoyer tried to put it up and pass it in a bipartisan fashion, couldn't do it, tried to put it back up, tried to pass it with only Democrat votes, couldn't do it because of dissension inside the ranks. And so ultimately, Speaker Pelosi had to admit defeat. And this is a good thing, though, Jordan. I mean, look, the only way, in my view, that FISA reauthorization happens in a way that is beneficial to the American people is if we get this dance between law enforcement and protecting the rights of the American people correct. I frankly don't think either the House bill or the Senate bill did that. I hope if you go through a conference committee, which I just want to reiterate, Jordan, this is not an unusual thing. This is how we used to do it in regular order. The House would pass one bill, the Senate would pass another, they would come together and they would try to iron out their differences. Jordan, either they need to pass a bill that will protect American citizens and aid law enforcement, or quite frankly, they need to just not pass anything.
You know, what's interesting to me is we're now starting to see Susan Rice's name come back in the Joe Biden world. And there's basically, even those inside his campaign is what The Atlantic is reporting. So someone on the, you know, they're coming from the left side of, on the issues. And they're saying that even if she's not chosen for a position like vice president, which she's in the running for, but is maybe too controversial and maybe doesn't have enough like state political experience and national on the front line. And also was not someone who, by the way, was so great in media interviews, because then they're talking about her as potentially Secretary of State. Yet President Obama decided not to try that with the process, because as our UN ambassador to the UN, she was part of the whole Benghazi lie. She went on all those morning shows and lied about the origins of Benghazi, which led to that investigation. And so she was going to have a problem of getting confirmed a second time. But now they're thinking, hey, maybe you bring in someone like this. To me, it's that this is like the protectionism coming back of the Washington swamp. This is their hope, is again, that they can get their kind of actors back in place who will continue to protect wrongdoing.
Jordan, the VP spot might literally be the only high-level position they should consider her for, because it doesn't require confirmation. Because if you had a confirmation hearing, you would have a re-airing of all those Sunday shows after the Benghazi attack where she falsely blamed it on a video. Jordan, you would also have intense questions about why she wrote that memo on January 20th, 2017, the day President Trump was coming into office, to memorialize that January 5th meeting. I just want to remind people, Jordan, all of the conversation is about how President Obama kept Jim Comey and Sally Yates back to talk about surveilling Mike Flynn. Why did Susan Rice write this memo 2 weeks ago? It's because there were two other people in that room with those three, and it was Joe Biden and Susan Rice. So to me, Jordan, picking her as his vice presidential candidate, it might be his way of making sure that they each continue to watch each other's back regarding that January 5th meeting.
All right, let's get back to the FISA issue, too. I want to continue to answer folks' calls. Let's go to Jerry in Rhode Island on line three. Jerry, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hello, team. I'm glad that Stan illuminated the amicus, a friend of the court who's in the FISA court. I never really knew that one was there. And if we did have someone with zealous integrity, and maybe even who says, no, we don't do that, I was glad to hear that. And is that what Stan thinks is the answer, or possibly a third oversight?
This has been something we've advocated, is that there likely needs to be not – I don't think of this, Stan, like Attorney General Barr's issues with FISA, because I think he has stood up to a lot of this and is trying to do something about the wrongdoing. But you have to look at it past that. And the Senate and even the House members, who are only elected on a two-year basis – they understand that. The Senate, especially, that's really their role, is as folks who get elected through the election processes and more staggered process. And you look at, you say, okay, but imagine if this goes right back to whoever Joe Biden decides they want to choose for Attorney General. And they now have all this power 100% back again. We believe that advocate position has to be much more stronger and get much more info when it comes specifically to American citizens, even if they're being alleged of being foreign actors.
And honestly, Jordan, I think this is your one chance at it, because remember that technically this amicus position has existed since 2015. It existed when the Carter application page application was moving. The difference is, Jordan, the court did not invoke the amicus to engage in this, and the amicus did not have access to the information. I think in order for this position to mean anything on both sides of this ledger, they have to be involved in every case that involves a U.S. citizen, and they have to access all of the information. Now, on the flip side of that, Jordan, the only way you can do that, the only way you can give an amicus access to sensitive classified information, is if you make sure that the information is secure inside the process. That's the portion of it that DOJ is concerned about, and rightfully so, Jordan. That's why you have to make these reforms carefully, and you have to seize this opportunity where it's up for reauthorization to get it right. Otherwise, the point that you've been saying repeatedly, Jordan, it's absolutely going to come true. This law enforcement tool, it's going to go away completely, and it's going to go away forever.
So, and I also want to let people know, you know, in this situation too, we've been contacted, as you can imagine, the ACLJ by lots of churches about their rights and roles, their First Amendment rights. The Department of Justice came right out and said, you know, the First Amendment rights in COVID-19, we have these specific rights, the freedom to worship, the freedom to exercise our faith, and that these are rights you cannot just override, and there's not exceptions in the Constitution to those rights specifically, which are different than business, which are different than again, the economic side of these issues, but that we, if you have these rights as individuals, that these cannot be trampled on. You saw what happened in Wisconsin. You saw basically the court come in and get rid of all restrictions in Wisconsin with COVID-19. And so we've been contacted before. I wanted to let folks know we are sending a letter today to Nevada and to their governor, specifically in Nevada. It's not on behalf of a specific client or specific church, but we've been contacted by a number of churches in Nevada because of one of their actions and orders that's Nevada specific. And again, this is state by state. Sometimes it's at the more local level. So states have been pretty generic and they've allowed municipalities. So in Nevada, it's the governor's office. And again, I think that the ACLJ is sending a letter to Governor Sisolak of Nevada regarding a discriminatory treatment of churches proposed under the governor's phase two plan for reopening the state. So earlier this week, the governor of Nevada released a statement and announced that Nevada would move into phase two of the state's Nevada United Roadmap to Recovery plan. So under the plan, there's a host of public services and indoor establishments are permitted to open up to 50% capacity. That's something we've heard a lot in our country. You may be 10% in your where you are. You may be at 25% capacity. You may be at 50%. You might be at 75%. You might have none. No restrictions at this point. That being said, it's a permission. It's not saying you have to do anything. It's a permission. But this was included but not limited to gyms, fitness facilities, and movie theaters, art galleries, museums, bowling alleys, indoor malls. But under this same plan, places of worship were not only prohibited from opening under the same terms, they're limited to no more than 50 people per service and strongly encouraged to keep their doors closed. This did not – it didn't matter the size of your church and how you could even distance people. So the governor's plan was discriminatory, violates the constitutional rights of everyone in Nevada. And so the ACLJ is demanding a response within the next 24 hours. So I know folks have wondered if we've gotten involved in these issues, and we have been very deliberate in the legal processes that we follow and the laws. We'll have more to report, I think, from there next week. But I wanted to let you know that that has happened while we are on the air, while we are talking to you on Jay Sekulow Live, and keeping you updated as well at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. We can come back. We'll continue to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. But I do want you to understand that ACLJ, we have been hard at work. Our folks around the country, around our different offices, regardless of what the rules may be in there, we continue to work. Courts continue to function. It may be different than how it was before, but it continues to function. If you can support the work of the ACLJ now, if you're someone who's in a position to do that, I encourage you to do it. ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
As I just reported, I want to make it clear to folks, we're going to be sending today a letter to the Nevada governor, and I wanted to let everybody know that because we've gotten a lot of questions have come in throughout the weeks. Obviously, you can imagine a lot of contact by churches, and we've tried to work through that, again, because the Department of Justice was very clear about these restrictions and rules that really there's no exceptions to the rights guaranteed to Americans in the Constitution, in the First Amendment. And I don't think anybody then either was saying, you know, before some of these protests turned violent, I believe it was the constitutional rights of Americans to come together and protest their freedom of speech and to utilize their freedom of speech. And no one said, well, you can't have group gatherings over 10 in Minneapolis. So it's the same thing to me. It's all rights that are guaranteed to us in our First Amendment to keep our check on the authority, to keep our rights to practice if we the faith that we choose in the way that we see fit. And I think adding some teeth to these rights has been good. So we're taking this action in Nevada. It's not on behalf of a specific client. It's because of what a number of churches have let us know about a restriction that says, hey, it's 50% open for, you know, your casino, but it's only 50 people for your church, regardless of what size it is, and what decision the church makes, even though the church has constitutional protections that the casino doesn't.
Absolutely right, Jordan. I mean, as states begin to reopen, this has been one of the things that we've known for some time is going to be problematic. Churches and places of worship absolutely have to be treated equally. And they, quite frankly, Jordan, they really have to be at the leading edge of reopening. They have to make sure that they're treated equally with other non-religious entities. And Jordan, I thought a key moment in making sure that states comply with this, because we have seen states start to move in a fashion that's been inequitable. I think one of the key moments was when the president this week came out and publicly said that churches are deemed essential and that governors better follow that direction. And if they didn't, that he would step in. Because you're right, Jordan, churches do have specific constitutional freedom. I think that churches, by and large, did a very good job of heeding public guidance to shut down, to go satellite. But as states reopen, Jordan, they have to be at the leading edge. They have to be treated equitably. And we at the ACLJ are going to make sure that governors do just that.
Well, this gets me back to the idea was that I think the country was extremely unified on coming together to fight back on this virus when we didn't know exactly specifically what to do. So what do we say? We say the best thing to do is we need to limit our contact with people that are not in our homes. Okay, so we did that too. But you know, we also have been doing that for 2 months, and we saw different states. People are having different experiences. Different cities are having different experiences. Obviously, you're more rural area, more urban area. And you've also experienced the virus differently depending on where you are in the country. And to me, it's not, it is, again, it just shows you, I just, for people out there, I think we'll have more to report Monday. I will keep people updated. This is only 24 hours that we've given the governor to respond here so that the churches have time to make decisions by Sunday and know what kind of decision they'd be making. So that's in Nevada specifically, and I just want to let people know the ACLJ is hard at work on these issues and these constitutional issues that we focus on at the American Center for Law and Justice and Religious Liberty, which is something that has always been front and center at the American Center for Law and Justice. Let's go to Sean's call in South Dakota. We're talking about this FISA issue. Just to update you before we go right to Sean, is just this is now going to go to the House and the Senate to try and come up with a compromise. So is FISA dead as we know it? I think so. I think it's fair to say as we knew it in the post-9/11 world, in this last 19 years, it is dead. It will not come back in the exact same way. Whether it has the same name or not is one thing. The rules that will be more fully implemented by Congress in a specific way are going to be a lot more direct, and it may have to be that way, as Stan said. We may have to go, because we went so broad one way in response to 9/11, we get almost two decades out from 9/11, and we start saying, okay, what do we need to update on our laws? How's technology changed? How's this changed? Who are our enemies? Who are we dealing with? Who's at the forefront? Okay, so what do we do to combat that? Do we need the same process? Do we need a somewhat different process? Sean, you're on the air from South Dakota. Thanks for calling.
How's it going, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
My thought on it is, in order to keep the FISA from being abused, is that, like you were stating earlier about the third entity, is that it really needs to be an outside entity that does the investigation. Someone that does not have law enforcement authority. They only have the authority to do the investigation. So the NSA or the FBI, they come up with someone that, and they're like, you know, we need to investigate this person. They send it to this third party. The third party has to then deem if it is a reasonable person to be investigated or spied on, and then they conduct the investigation from that point. And then once they gather the information, then they send it back to the NSA or the FBI. But that takes the total control out of the FBI and the NSA's hands for being able to abuse the FISA Act.
Yeah, and it's the different. You've got to be independent from prosecutors, Stan. It cannot be the same office. It's got to be somehow outside office. But I also think you do have to deal with the classified setting. Right. And I believe that to expand the role, we have lots of different agencies, including the intel world. They all have to deal with IGs. They all have to deal with investigations. It's not always as high profile as the ones we're talking about right now either. These kind of issues, they come up on a smaller scale, when it involves the rights of Americans, when it involves people who are politically targeted because of the policy positions they advocate for, it underscores you cannot have someone in there whose only role is if the judge decides, because it's putting this up to the judges. A lot of people have asked, like, why aren't the judges getting in trouble? They don't know what info they should even be asking for at the point. Like, if you get info from the FBI, if you can't trust that, you got to have someone outside to the judge who can actually put that forward. And it could be outside the prosecutor's office, but still part of either congressional oversight or executive branch oversight.
Yeah, I agree with that, Jordan. I agree with the premise of what Sean is saying. I disagree just a slight bit with how it should be implemented. And for this reason, you're absolutely correct that it has to be separate from the prosecutorial team if it's going to actually stave off some of these abuses. It also can't be up to the court's discretion when that advocate gets involved. They need to be involved every time there's a U.S. citizen involved, and they need to have access to all of the information. And that's why I disagree with Sean a little bit that it can't be an outside entity. It has to be someone, Jordan, that we can give classified information to. And if we give classified information to an outside group, then the concern that you're hearing from DOJ becomes very relevant. What are you going to get less of if you do that, Jordan? You are going to get less of that information, that intelligence sharing from other countries. So in my view, totally separate from the prosecutors, not at the court's discretion, but Jordan, inside the system and someone that would have clearance to access that classified information. But then ultimately, Jordan, someone that would be accountable if a target of surveillance was not adequately defended. That would be their sole job to do it. That's how I think it should be set up.
Listen, folks, we're going to continue to update you on all these matters at ACLJ.org. I think take some time, regardless of where you are in the country right now, what your city may be facing, what your state may be facing, what you may be facing. Pray for the country. It's a time, again, during this virus and how it's affected everybody to some extent. Whether it's a loss of life, whether it's a loss of business, or the situation with George Floyd, we need to pray for our country. We can't ignore those issues at this time, and we also can't ignore our constitutional rights. Whether you're a protester, peaceful protester, or an American involved in a political movement, we can't ignore that. Go to ACLJ.org. Stay updated on all these issues, including what's happening in Nevada with churches there. ACLJ.org. We'll talk to you next week.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.